So what do your friends call you, Robert?
Call me, you know, Robert, 360 Wise.
Robert, 360. 360 man, 360 Wise.
Yeah.
So you live and work out of Miami.
Live and work out of Miami.
And now you flew up, you doing other business in town or?
Well, no, I flew up specifically for you.
God bless you, man. Yes. Thank you
for coming. Yes.
So you've worked with some incredible people and kind of ahead of your time, even in this digital media scape, I think, right? You built an empire out of this and you've worked with incredible people. Right. Some have referred to you as a media guru. Have you ever heard that?
A lot of times.
All right.
A lot of times, yes.
So what's it like? What are some stories? What comes to mind when you think of your body of work so far? What rises to the top as an experience you want to share?
You know, every day is actually a different experience. There's, in my life, there's no hallmark, I should say. They're all hallmarks, right? Clients are partners. It's like a takeover, jumping into the matrix. Imagine, let me rewind it back. And when I say jumping into the matrix, I come from a space where I had no clue about Twitter. My cousin called me from D.C. You know, I'm from Washington, D.C., relocated to South Florida, and I was doing music. My music was positive music. I've always been anti-dumb and down, meaning, you know, with the pants sagging and woo-woo-woo, stuff that doesn't help the community. I've been against that from day one. And it took a second to realize that I have a lot of people cheering for me.
Because of that.
Because of that, but the negativity overwhelmed the positivity, so it was going nowhere. And with it going nowhere meant getting on publications, getting the visibility necessary. At this time, we're speaking in 2000.
Right.
Year 2000.
So, Robert, when you say negativity, you mean just the general negativity or specifically against you because you're trying to go positive?
No, not against me, because they didn't even know my story and where I come from. I was speaking about negativity in itself. There was one individual and, you know, he's deceased now. God bless his soul for whatever course that actually is. His name was Q. And he ran a platform called WorldStar.
Okay.
And they had our people jumping off of bridges, jumping off of windows and everything. I mean, it was ridiculous, but it was called WorldStar Hip Hop. And I'm like, you know, there were a lot of old hip hop legends that were trying to get them to take the hip hop terminology off of the word WorldStar. So
because
of the association of, you know, they were degrading women and things of that nature.
Right.
Anything goes. This was a terrible point of time in 2000. It was very beneficial for them. They made a lot of money because the media makes a lot of money off of negativity. So I created WorldStar Hip Hop, and you know, a lot of advocates and activists, they were like, how are you going to create a WorldStar Hip Hop? I said, well, we're going to go to war against that.
I see.
Right. And in the midst of doing so, I found myself going deeper and deeper into a technology rabbit hole that I had no clue about. Didn't go to school for it at all. Then my cousin calls me and says, you got to get on Twitter because 50 Cent and Floyd Mayweather going back and forth. You got to jump in and let them know that you on the platform.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what Twitter was.
So
fast forward, I got on the Twitter, started becoming active on Twitter, started engaging. I started to get a feel of what this social media, and it was awesome to me. Listen, and it's still awesome today if a person is on there for the right reasons. And what was awesome about social media at that point for myself was the ability to speak to people all over the globe.
Right. You had access.
Right. Oh my gosh, all over the globe. And I, okay, here's a hallmark. I could proudly say, no ifs, ands, or buts about it, that if anyone pulls up any of my data since I've been online, there's no negativity.
It's positive.
It's all positive.
So why didn't they call you Robert Positive? Bobby Paz. Bobby Paz.
No,
I don't know if everybody can say that.
No. I mean,
because it likes to pull you in.
Oh, it's.
It likes to pull you in.
It likes to pull it really does like to pull you in. And then as time has progressed, and we have had different platforms that have emerged. So you go from Twitter being the king of the mountain, then you had Facebook slide in. Those were two different platforms at the time. And then you had Mark start buying up Snapchat and then switching into Instagram and And now the whole globe is interacting, right? And each channel says something and does something else.
Different, is it, each one's hitting a different nerve, different platform. And but you know how to use that too.
I know how to graciously, yes. I know how to interject into each and every one of them. I know how to interject into the algorithms of each and every one of them because, you know, media, social media, Google, everything, you know, runs off of a different speed and it changes continually. This whole everything dealing with media, just like society, changes extremely fast. The problem is a lot of our folks are living in a delay. So I try to stay ahead of the curve.
And you help them be on the front of it.
No question about it.
So each platform has a different, there are different algorithms at play, but there's also a different culture, right, among the users.
Yes.
Even the same person using three different platforms, they're engaging in a different culture in each platform. So you survey all of that and you know how to work it for your clients.
No doubt about it. I mean, you might even say, what's Pinterest? And Pinterest has been around for a long time. And someone might think about Pinterest off of the homemaker.
Right. Putting up Etsy craft kind of stuff. Yeah.
But, you know, Pinterest at the same time, if you're continually tapping into their algorithm with that photo and a link that goes back to what you're actually trying to show them gives you a strong Google footprint, right? And a lot of our people forget that no matter how many platforms are out here, the king of the mountain is that footprint, which is Google.
Right.
And as we continue to advance with ChatGPT and different AI components and things of that nature. Remember, it took a long time for them to take the phone booth off the street, to take the rotary phone out the house, for a lot of our people to get adapted to mobile.
Right.
And that's just about as how long it will take for that switch to occur. And when that switch occurs, when it comes to digital footprints, we're already integrating at the exact same time.
So we're describing the technology, the advancement in communications platforms. But what I hear you saying underneath this, Robert, is you it kind of feels to me like you're it's not just about your voice. You have been on a journey to find a way to have a certain community that couldn't necessarily be heard, and positivity be heard. And it's like you're trying to give positivity a voice. And so you're studying what the dynamics of this landscape to learn how to use it. Hmm. But underneath all of that, you seem to be like on this 20, 30 year quest to really give positivity a voice. Hmm. Where is that correct? And where does that come from, if so, in your life? Where does that nature come from?
Well, that's totally correct in the way that you described or your analysis of what these footprints are that I'm walking in. I can take it back 1 second and actually say that I've never, and we have never, 360 Wise itself, my wife, she's the co-CEO, Tasha, I've never advertised. We've never done for ourselves what we do for others.
Interesting.
At this moment, I'm now beginning to flare up, consider it as the man behind the curtain, because there are different shifts that are happening, and I'm doing that purposely. But it's always for our clients. And how did we get here? Mm-hmm. Okay. So humble becomings, you know, I mean, like when much is given, you know, you've got to give back a little bit more. Like my life mm-hmm. is, my life is a movie, a mm-hmm. real motion picture movie, like, very, very deeply engaged in coming from humble beginnings, single.
Washington, D.C.
Washington, D.C.
Big family, small family?
I had a twin. My twin passed at birth. So it was just me and my mom.
Wow.
She separated from my dad. I was born in New York. That didn't work with my mom and my dad. Moved back to D.C.
Moved to you. So single mom, single mm-hmm. son, you know, one child family.
Just me and my mom. Mm. I could take you back to, she's working 2 and 3 jobs and she's going to school at the same time. It gets hard, you know, welfare. I remember going up to the neighborhood market with the food stamps and everything. Mm. Like it gets, and I remember promising that if I ever got in position, you know, my mom would never have to go through this. Because as a young male in an urban environment, no brothers, no sisters, I'm looking at families differently than families act. And what do I mean by that? So you would actually see a family of 10 siblings, you know, all on one porch. Don't mess with them. It's 10 of them. You yeah. get me? But they bickering with one another.
I see.
They don't realize
what they've got.
They don't realize what they have. You know, so you're kind of a loner and you kind of have to stay strong and the environment builds you into, you're either going to be 8 or you're going to eat them. You know, it's Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
And I'm a fast forward as I'm going. So how do I get my mom better things? Because in my mind, it's my mom needs we got black and white TV. My mom needs a color TV. How are we going to do this? You know, she needs a remote control TV, not the remote that you plug into the TV with the cord and you turn it. Like we're all the way in beginning phases. Wow. Like I go back to Atari 2600 and, you know, Genesis, you're just playing table tennis on a television, And you start to get into what your environment is doing, and that's selling drugs and trying to be cool for the young ladies. And then you realize that was a trap, you know, and then you got your grandma praying for you.
Where was grandma?
Grandma Redman, and my great-great-grandma, Grandma Redman, she lived on Rock Creek Church Road. Grandma Elois lived on Lamont Street. These are 5 blocks apart. Me and my mom, we lived on Webster Street. That's 6 blocks apart. So we were all in Northwest D.C.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm from uptown, D.C.
Okay. Right? And then how often did you see each other?
Grocery time coming, grandma come and scoop us up, you know, or scoop me up, make sure that I get whatever I want, you know, because whether the car was working or not with my mom, I'm talking humble beginnings.
I hear you. You described, you know, the family across the street with 10 mm-hmm. siblings. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering as a son, you know, I'm hearing you talk about you want to provide for your mother. So you're seeing also your mother's vulnerability, I assume, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. There's like, she's a single mom mm-hmm. working hard. Mm-hmm. Who's taking care of her, mm-hmm. and you want to provide for your mother.
Mm-hmm.
Were there also values? I want to continue with your storyline, mm-hmm. but just along the way, were mm-hmm. there values that your mother was instilling in you
core values, and the values were always towards the higher power, mm-hmm. you know. And so that means that Washington, D.C., born in New York, raised in D.C. down the street was St. Gabriel's Catholic Church, right? So we were raised in the Catholic Church. I was raised in the Catholic Church.
Is that just because that was the church you could get to by foot, or was your mom raised in the Catholic Church also?
Well, actually, my mom's mom, Grandma Elois, you know, that lived on Lamont Street, she had a lot of dealings with the Episcopalian. Yes, Episcopalian. Oh no, Episcopalian, but it's a big one in D.C. Yeah. Presbury, United Methodist Church.
Okay.
United Methodist Church, right? And then my mom's dad, right? Mm-hmm. Because my grandma and.
Were they still together? Was granddad in the picture?
They got my granddaddy Woodrow. They got separated. Grandma Elois and granddaddy Woodrow got separated. So granddaddy Woodrow owned a church in Chicago, Southside. He had a big mansion on one corner, the church on the other corner.
So he was a landlord or he was a preacher?
He was a preacher. Mm. Owned the house and the church. Right there, and I remember because I would go there in the summertime, and you know, so religion and God has always been there, and different levels of that. So we'll go from my mom had some questions for the preacher, mm-hmm. and the preacher couldn't answer them.
Okay,
and then my mom goes to Islam, right?
Wow,
you know, so my mom's going to Islam. She's walking around. Everybody's looking at my mom, and then
is that unique?
Oh, it was totally
On the block.
It was totally unique on the block.
Now you're standing out even more.
Even more. Even more. Even more.
And you felt the negativity?
The negativity was you realize that it was negativity when you come out from it. Right.
Okay.
Speaking, you know, I'm living in.
Because to survive, even, you got to be a part of whatever's going on just to survive.
That's correct. That's correct.
You're already standing out enough as it is.
That's correct. The fellas come to my house. My mom is giving you couscous and eggplants. And, you know, they didn't even understand that then. But, you know, we fast forward right now and healthy living is healthy eating.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. But let's go even a step further. Mm-hmm. So now the police are looking for me because I'm not coming home and mm-hmm. I'm not going to school. I'm out running the streets. Mm-hmm. And they gave me a warning. They basically said, you're going to go to Boys Village, mm-hmm. right?
That's like a juvie?
Oh, it's total juvie, mm-hmm. right? Or you're going to have to go away to some program somewhere. Mm-hmm. And you don't have too much time to think about it. We get called back out here again because you're not showing back up for home. You're not meeting your curfew. That's it.
So you're like 16?
I am 15 at this point. I'm 15 at this point. And at 16, I chose, okay, no, I'm not going to go to Boys Village. Just send me the Teen Challenge. Whatever this is, take me to Teen Challenge. I end up in Norfolk, Virginia, right? 3 years in Norfolk, Virginia. But Teen Challenge—
Is that a government program or is that like a Christian program?
Teen Challenge is a Christian program, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. And David Wilkerson, he founded Teen Challenge. And it was more so for adolescents and youth that were having troubled experiences, you know, whether it's violence, whether it's drugs, whether it's alcohol, whether it's truancy issues, things of that nature. They only accepted a certain amount of people to come in.
And it's like a discipline program.
Total discipline, to the point that you had to learn the entire Bible from the beginning to the end. The curriculum there was a Christian curriculum that was like a 2-year advance. What does that mean? That means that when I graduated from that curriculum, if I would have, and I'll get to that point, but the 12th grade in the Christian curriculum that they had was equivalent to a bachelor's degree. After I hit the 12th grade, it's equivalent to a bachelor's degree.
We're almost talking seminary here. This is not summer camp.
No, this is if you're not doing what we're telling you to do, you're going to be up all night with a toothbrush, and you're going to be cleaning up the corners of the kitchen floor. You're going to use this toothbrush. You know, where this is real discipline. Wow. You had people from the army that were missionaries,
right,
and part of their
right,
missionary
right. Yeah,
service.
I heard of this program. Yeah, I got you. So how was mom behind you on this? Like she was...
Oh, it was no choice. Yeah, she
was
wrote...
Was she worried for you? I mean, was she... Yeah, I mean, she must have been worried for you when you're running the streets, but she... What she was behind this program.
She was totally behind it.
But she didn't see you for 3 years, or do you sometimes...
Well, she came up, her and my grandma. Mm. They came up maybe about 3 or 4 times.
Okay, and come
right?
and say hi.
Yeah, come up for a visit.
Give you some supplies. They'll have to give you some.
And they'll send a little supplies over you. Just like, yeah.
That's
but
great.
But it molded me. It molded me. And then I came home for a home visit and saw everybody was making money.
Doing
the same thing. Everybody was driving Jettas, Porsches.
Maybe
Benzes.
A few faces missing by this time. Few people gone.
Well, while I was gone, one of my best friends got murdered, you know, by one of my other best friends.
Oh my God.
You know, it was, but it was
wires.
Street. Yeah, it wasn't supposed to happen, but it happened. And it was that street life, you know. Mm. But listen, praise God that I wasn't there when all of this. So at this point, we're now talking 85 for sure.
Okay.
We're in 1985 right now.
This episode of the Peace Starts With Me podcast is brought to you by our merch store. Check it out at peacestartswithme.com/collections. We have apparel and accessories for the whole family, including backpacks, pins, aprons, shirts, baby onesies and bibs, and more. Show your support and go to peacestartswithme.com/collections.
We're in 1985 when it's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Washington, D.C. is the murder capital of the world, and the news is saying it all, right? I go home on a home visit. I see everybody. Temptation. Look how temptation creeps in. I go home for a home visit, go to a house party. No one has seen me. And mark you, this is an excerpt from the book that I'll be writing. But my mom told everyone that I was dead. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So people are
coming.
So
that's the story rolling around when you were in camp.
Yes.
It was because you died or.
Yeah. So I did the Machiavelli before Tupac did Machiavelli. Is the disappearing act. They all thought that I hung myself. And then hung yourself turns into different ways that he got killed or woo, woo, woo. And this is the word
story
on the street.
Around.
So when I show back up, people are falling out, thinking they're seeing ghosts and woo, woo, and things of that nature. And
so you go to a house party and they're
on a home visit.
You mentioned you were at a house party
right.
on your home visit.
Right.
And temptation's there for you.
Right.
But there's also this dynamic where people are shocked that you're even alive.
That's totally correct. And this is a minute portion of people because this was my cousin.
Just
had
those
the,
who knew
yeah,
you.
My cousin Omar had the house party.
Okay.
So, you know, so it was just a select few that from a whole nother side, northeast side. Uh-huh. I'm from northwest, northeast side.
Yeah.
And it was just one night, right? That one house party. Mm. But that one house party, and I'm seeing everybody's making money. Led me to leave Teen Challenge instead of getting my diploma. And I was 3 months away from it. I went and took the GED and got the highest score in all of Northern Virginia.
Wow.
Came back home, articulating my words, still speaking about Christ, and they didn't want to hear it. Uh-huh. So I'm like, y'all are brainwashed.
Hmm.
Right? And they're like, you're different. You know, after they realize that I'm back now and I've got to get my own place at this particular point.
Mom's
is in Virginia. Mom is good. She's in Virginia. But mom's upset that I
didn't finish
the program. I didn't finish because I already, Professor Lovett at Hampton University already had it scheduled for me to slide straight into Hampton U.
Wow.
I turned my back on all of that listening to The Whisper.
I see.
Right? Listening to The Whisper, looking at Temptation, right? And then Temptation and The Whisper took me on a whole nother ride because I'm an adult now, right? I'm 18 years old. This is...
And now you've also kind of got freedom is a new flavor because you've been on this really tightly controlled program. Yes. So now you're an adult. You can free to make your own choices.
Yes.
Nobody's looking at you.
Yes. Yes. And it's me against the world type of scenario, right? And not to harbor on that so much, but our youth are going through that daily.
Sure.
Right? Our young, all colors, cultures, and creeds, they go through that daily. Whether they're living in it for real or they're looking at it on Instagram or they're looking at it on television, and television is on your phone at this point. They're going through these same circumstances that I just clarified in just different aspects, which all correlates into the reason why I've been blessed. I don't contribute anything to myself. I'm humble and I'm thankful that I'm still alive.
Yeah.
Right.
So this shaped your life. When did you get back? When did you, you know, your journey of, you know, the free choices that you were able to make again? When did you decide to build the voice of positivity? How old were you?
I totally decided to build the voice of positivity after I was facing 75 to life. You see how this goes? This is how the devil and the whisper will get you totally ensnared. Everything that you think is glamour and glitter and woo-woo-woo, it just... It's temporary, right? And all of my so-called friends caught a RICO charge, right? The conspiracy, double CE, they had it on the news. This is when they were raiding all of the spots in Washington, D.C., right? And my neighborhood was one of them, and they had to throw somebody under the bus. So it was me.
It was you.
So it was me. And I was, you know, I was going to be their sacrificial lamb, so they thought, right? And I had a choice. I could have took a cop to 25 years, or I could have fought it. And if I lose, it's 75 to life. And I just prayed, and I'm like, you're going to give me all or give me nothing. And I sat in there for 2.5 years fighting this case. First trial was a mistrial, 9-3 the government's favor. The second trial, all 12 not guilty. And I promised the creator, you let me out of here. I am never going to look back.
All right. That's your moment of reckoning. Right
you
there.
See? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, I mentor young youth in Miami.
In the community Overton. Now. Yes, you're serving. You understand how to relate and guide these. So what program are you running in the community now?
Well, not per se running. There's an optimist. Yeah, so the, what is it? It's the Miami, the Miami Overtown Optimist Club. It's a Overtown in Miami is a district, it's a landmark.
Okay.
And they're gentrifying that as we speak.
Right.
But there's still a lot of youth in there that...
Losing their way.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like I had the opportunity to come and speak to about 15 to 20. Mm-hmm. And they love me and want me back. And I'm like, I love y'all and I want to come back. Mm-hmm. But this stimulates from digital media. This stimulates from my online presence. This stimulates from acquaintances, partners, and business owners that I've met along the way based on the character value.
So that's how you got connected.
That's exactly how I got connected.
And your story kind of hits with them. They can introduce you to programs that are trying to help people that were in your position when you were a kid.
Well, the best thing about it to magnify what you just stated, like you're the second person that, and actually the first that has heard it to this magnitude besides the kids, the first kids, the group of kids that I've spoken to. Like, I'm, when I say I'm coming from behind the curtain now, no one really knew my story. They just knew it's something about this guy.
Right.
For some reason, and it's all God, right?
Right, right.
Because I don't wear it on my, you know.
So it's not, it's actually, it's not your primary song. But but it is the, it's the drum beat behind
it all. It's the drum beat. It's the, you know, it's the drum beat. It's like when I went to South Korea, when me and my wife went to South Korea to see Mother Moon.
Yeah. Tell
I
me
mean,
about
that experience right there. So that was written. You get me? Like, everything is written, and we're living in a delay. The whole thing is you got to actually keep your pulse on that algorithm of life. And it's two routes on this. It's positive or negative. It's just real easy. It's really two routes. It's positive or negative. And it's going to lead you there. And if your heart is really there on change, the creator is going to put you around change makers. You got to sincerely feel like this, though. A lot of my, a lot of people, they just talk it. They don't know the pain. They don't know the struggle, right? On, and I don't brag about money. I don't brag about cars. I don't brag about none of that. None of that is not me. All of that is not me. Because I've been there. I've lived that life. Yeah. I see how that goes. But to save people and to let them know that they could be doing better, that's worth more than money. That, forget money. This is what we're here for.
Right.
So you go to South Korea. I'm flying to South Korea, and I'm looking at all this and looking at Mother Moon and the Mother of Peace.
Yeah.
You get me? And I got my wife right here. You know, and I prayed for my wife when I was sitting in the jail cell. And I prayed for palm trees, mangoes, and kiwis. And I said what I was going to do when I get out. And it happens. It's all happening.
Yeah.
It's happening in real time. But you got to recognize it.
Right.
And you got to give.
Right.
Wholeheartedly. You can't be fake.
Right.
Because, you know, the real can smell the fake.
Right.
No ifs, ands, or buts. You got to have a, if your heart is pure in all you do, it, the sky is not the limit.
There is no limit.
There's no limit.
Hmm. So it is written. You know, you came to Korea with Tasha, right? What were you expecting to see? Like, I mean, not expecting, but what did you imagine it might be before you got there?
Let me tell you, we had no clue. It, all we knew is that we were going to a media conference.
Right. That was the World Summit 2020,
right? 2020 World Summit.
Right.
And it's, you know, we were, it was an honor to go to the media conference. And we got there and just looking at the greeting, you just, you know, just the whole setup. It, this is beyond red carpet. This is beyond, this is like, never before. Every you got thousands of children and adults,
youth
and just happy and pure and happy to see you, and you're walking in between all of, you know, it's then you have all the delegates, and you have someone from every country sitting at this table, that table, that table. Okay, you and Tasha, y'all going to sit right there. You got your earplugs in so that, you know, you don't...
You understand what's going on.
Hey, listen, I said to myself, I'm like, hold on, this looks like we're on the...
A UN meeting
or
something?
UN meeting or something, right?
Yeah.
oh, gosh. And it was... And then the delivery, the you know, the conversation, the... You know, like Mr. Farrell has said, he said, you know, what's local is global. Everything is right here.
Right.
He's talking. And when he said that, I'm like, holy smokes, he pinned it. But that wasn't it. When we went to the show, to the, when we went to the, no, it was the marriage ceremony.
Right. The blessing ceremony.
The blessing ceremony.
What was your experience there?
Oh, we get into the bus. And it's cold, and we're riding through the mountains, and we get to this.
Yeah, because it's like February,
This is in February, right? We get to this part of it, and all of this is the mother of peace. This is, oh, that's her hamburger spot. That's hers right there, right? Listen, that's the gymnasium over there. This right here is beyond the amphitheater. This is the super center, and this is where we're going into.
Yeah.
Right? And then hundreds of thousands of people and just the peace that you felt inside of that arena. Life-changing. And just to see the mother of peace speaking graciously. It was God right there. It's but it goes back. If you're not tapped in, you can't recognize. And see, a lot of our people, they're tapped into what they're programmed.
Right.
Right? And that's religion, not spirituality. That's not personal. We've got to all tap into a personal relationship with the creator of everything.
Right.
And then you'll be able to realize.
You can feel it. You can discern it.
Oh, Moses, Abraham, Jesus, they all, nothing's dead. It's all alive. It's speaking to you in real time. You just got to open your eyes.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, I heard a lot of feedback from people that experienced that for the first time. And whether we're talking friends in media or faith leaders, civic leaders, heads of state. I think at that event, we had the former Secretary General of the UN, Ban Ki-moon, was there. But, you know, you got people on all sides of the spectrum, right? All sides of the aisle. Mm-hmm. But they all commented on the same thing. It's like, where else are we experiencing like all of these types of people coming together, not just to talk about peace, but like you just described, those who could discern it felt like we were already experiencing it.
That's correct.
Walking in it.
Yeah.
So why then the negativity or the misunderstanding or the, you know, why are change makers, why are peacemakers such a threat?
I believe that, oh, that was a heck of a question. I love that question. I'm going to slit it right in the middle. You got one side, and let's speak like of the mother of peace.
Yeah.
That doesn't need anything from anyone.
Mm-hmm.
She's speaking.
Right.
What she's been designated to speak.
What? Yep.
Period.
Right.
She's not solicited. She doesn't need anything from it. But the other side, they're scrapping for the monetary. You get me?
Yeah.
So, if you have this guy over here and these congregations over here and they're racing to get some of them from their congregation to here and they're in the human side of this thing.
I got
here.
You. Yeah.
So, someone on this side, like Jesus ain't asking for nothing. Jesus,
with or without you, this is it.
This is it.
This isn't a transactional like thing.
No, this is, we're speaking, she was speaking and is speaking life.
Right.
Like, again, if, you know, many are picked, but few are chosen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, you go Matthew 19:16. Oh, good master, and Esau say, or Jesus say, why thou call thee good? Nothing is good but the Father above. If thou desire to make it to the kingdom of heaven, follow our commandments. Right.
Mm.
So first of all, how many of our people that are out here walking this life, and they're intimidated by the mother of peace?
Because it's a threat on their way of life.
Oh, no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
But what if they just, you know, got to the point of experiencing what you're experiencing?
It's life changing. Mm. But I really think that they need to, it's a media push. It's you know, the devil is what we call it, you know, is everywhere. Mm-hmm. So is God.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fight. It's going to be a fight. We got to push harder on opening up the minds and the hearts and the souls of the masses, right? We've got to push harder. You don't see the media right now is talking P. Diddy, P. Diddy. Mm-hmm. They not talking about Putin just told all of y'all that we're going to worship black Jesus.
Right.
How about that?
Right.
At the exact same time, right? Yeah. Well, how about, and it's artifacts, and you can see it now.
Yeah.
Well, what I'm speaking to you guys about is someone that's living right now.
Right, thank you.
Mother of Peace. She's right now. It's tangible. And that correlates into what I'm actually saying in my story. Mm-hmm. And I'm blessed and I'm humbled and I'm thankful and I am tangible. And mm-hmm. I have a testimony, right, that mm-hmm. can change your life.
Right.
Right. If you only take it as it's real, I'm here. It will change the same way that I derive knowledge from all the way in South Korea.
Yeah.
Mother of Peace. You get me?
Yeah.
They got to open, but our people are locked in. You got to unlock them, right? That's 360 wise. Get out the matrix. Don't be afraid.
This episode of the Peace Starts With Me podcast is brought to you by our merch store. Check it out at peacestartswithme.com/collections. We have apparel and accessories for the whole family, including backpacks, pins, aprons, shirts, baby onesies and bibs, and more. Show your support and go to peacestartswithme.com/collections.
So what project are you working on now that you're most excited about in that vein?
So, you know, right now we're actually about to start just pushing individuals to own their own media distribution platform.
Oh.
Put a real dagger in it.
Ooh.
Because if we're going to offer it to you, meaning an actual way to circumvent algorithms, to make yourself the hero, and to get more people and more traffic to your site or to your product, or would it at an affordable rate, because it's not about us, it's about the masses, right? Positive content.
Yeah.
Then we've built out a subset for that. You want to be on Roku, Amazon.
Right.
We're building that out as well. But you know.
So you're now, because you are you worked the platforms, but you've also developed your own platforms, and now you're, you know, giving people what you've made in a sense.
We're offering it because again, I've never been the you know, we're in the back. We have so many NDAs. We're pushing so much media from heavy listers out here that I still never see the time to push myself out there and talk about what we're offering. They hear it on your broadcast right now. We might splash it out a little bit, but we have too many things going on to continue to talk about. I've got this for you. I'm offering this for you.
So, speak to me, if you will, about working with MC Hammer, Crump. What was that like?
Life changing. Like MC Hammer. I mean, just there it is again. The media, the misconception. You know, he taught me one real valuable thing that he didn't even verbally say, and I found out later. Right. When everyone was talking, and you know, because the world loves negativity, they want to be like, oh, well, he went bankrupt. Well, you don't understand that bankruptcy is part of big business, and you don't understand that he was feeding his entire neighborhood. We're talking Oakland, and you don't understand that he had stock in all these platforms before they even popped, and now they kind of see it. And he allowed the system to play its game, but he's one of the top guys in the background right now for AI tech and everything that's going on, and he keeps it low key.
So he's ahead of the curve.
He's always been ahead of the curve
and misunderstood,
and unapologetic, not trying to make anybody understand it, because many have picked a few of chose. I mean, for him to you know, to pull me in, and to the point that he helped mold me into, and this is my, while we're on Twitter and everything, is mold me into what media is, what to do, what not to do, to the point to inviting us, me and my wife, flew us in, go to the movies, have a surprise birthday party at his ranch. I mean, it's real family. It's nothing like that. It's It's no business relationship. This is family.
How did you first meet?
Just like this, doing the podcast. So he actually saw when I was pushing the anti-dumbing down in the whole beginning of this segment. He saw that online. I reached out in regards to doing an interview with him. He said yes, and it was history from that point on. And, you know, kind of the same thing with attorney Ben Crump. You know, he introduced from Silky Slim. Silky Slim is an advocate for social justice. He has a tremendous story. He comes from humbling beginnings and you know, criminal and crime and justice and things of that nature. He introduced me to attorney Ben Crump.
And MC Hammer introduced you to Benjamin Crump?
No, Silky Slim. So I skipped from MC Hammer, and I'm over here on Ben Crump.
Yeah.
And again, I've been in a district attorney's office with a camera right there while he's doing a press conference. I got ABC, NBC, CBS, Associated Press right there, and I'm right here. I mean, it's like you would never think, is this really happening? Yes, it's really happening. But it goes back again. Where's your trust? Because these real players,
yeah,
they've got to trust you.
Yeah.
Right? Again, they could smell what's real and what's fake from a mile away, and they got a whole team behind them at the exact same time. You know, because
it's not just the quality of your work, but your character, your background, your legacy.
That's everything.
Yeah.
And with that, you don't need a lot. You just need a couple of those. Or you just need whatever God is going to give you.
Sure.
And you work it from there.
That's a really big message. That's a big message. I think a lot of people can apply that. What would you say you learned from working with Benjamin Crump?
No sleep. I still can't fathom how
how
he
you
does
can
it.
Work with no sleep.
Oh man, I work with no sleep. I don't know what he does. I don't understand how he has to be everywhere
all
at the exact same time, all the time. His entire life is dedicated to social justice. His entire life is dedicated to the, you know, the iniquities of society. And it's not just the black and brown. It's all colors, cultures, and creed. If it comes to his desk, if someone was wronged, it doesn't matter if it's Johnson & Johnson or if it's Universal Records, mm-hmm. right? It doesn't matter if you're wrong, you're wrong. If someone was wrong, he's trying to right the wrongs. Of make sure that they're compensated. You get me?
He cares. Just,
he totally
cares. Isn't that what helps him like stay awake and that be is the everywhere only, at the same time?
And that is the core ingredient to success. MC Hammer, Attorney Ben Crump, yourself.
It's not the money or success or the fame that's motivating
that's a
you.
Byproduct.
It's the purpose.
It's the purpose.
It's the purpose.
Everything else is a byproduct.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else is a byproduct.
Mm-hmm. And by making that your engine, then it's much harder to buy you out. Much harder to sway you from your principle because that's not what you're in it for.
No.
It gets back to that thing you're saying here.
That's correct.
You're in it or you're in the... you're at the tables or you're,
yeah,
you're speaking it. You're doing it.
That's correct.
You're on point.
That's correct.
I think it's the same thing you mentioned about, you know, Mother Moon, Father Moon. All we ever hear is the same about them. They never sleep. And you're thinking about making an impact on humanity. It's hard to put your head on the pillow for several hours. But it's the same thing that you're tapping into, that purpose. I think you're able to speak a little bit today about your background. Mm-hmm. But you know. I'm imagining I'm going back to the story you're telling me, and then, mm-hmm. but you also introduced Tasha to us.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Tasha, your wife, mm-hmm. and then you got kids, right? How many kids
eight.
You got?
We have
eight kids
with my wife. That's correct.
How old? What kind of?
Well, Keyshawn is 22 or 23. My youngest right now is, and forgive me. Because yes, I forget ages because I have
in diapers or crawling or walking.
Oh well, my youngest Nana is five.
Five.
She's five. My
oldest. So just starting kindergarten. So you got from like 22 to five range.
That's correct.
Eight kids.
That's correct.
That's beautiful.
That's correct.
Oh, man.
That's correct. Homeschooling. Homeschooling my young ones, yes.
I put two of my kids through Dunkley High School.
Okay.
That's my name, Damien. Okay. Dunkley High School for like a year and a half. Because of COVID, we were also moving. We were moving from the East Coast to the West Coast and then to Asia because my job shifted to Asia, as you know.
Right.
And I wasn't leaving my family behind. You know, a lot of people find ways to do that, but Yumiko did not want to just send me off on some mission and she's back. So we tried to figure out how could we do this together. It's a lot harder.
Right.
And probably much harder on the kids in many respects. But we stayed as a unit. Mm. And so by the time we left the East Coast, the school year was like, okay, I gotta get them into like a year of homeschool before I can settle them in Bangkok. We ended up moving to Bangkok, Thailand. Mm. But my kids always tease me about Dunkley High School because like I set it up for them, but that's not easy. Mm-hmm. Like I spent some time looking at it, but it's not easy to homeschool your kids. Mm-hmm. But I heard that during the COVID season, homeschooling went up like 15% because not for the reasons I was stating. But for the first time, parents were listening to what the teachers are teaching their kids on their laptops in the kitchen table, right? Mm-hmm. And so homeschooling went up, I think, because of that. But did you put all of your kids through homeschool, their whole?
Well, it was the same scenario. Once COVID hit, it's like we're definitely not sending our children to school. We're just going to homeschool. And then it's like, you know what? We're going to keep them right here and homeschool them on and maintain just like this. That's correct. They have a little bit more, as you stated, hear what the teachers are talking about. The morals and the principles are we could keep a glove on it opposed to, you know, a lot of times you send your, I mean, but this is society, but you send your child to school and, you know, your child might, I mean, listen, children are going, however a person raised their children, it's how they raise their children. Just knowing how other people raise their children might affect your child. So it's different correlations on that thought process if they're homeschooled and then you're still taking them out into society, but you have a stronger glove on what they're looking at, whom they're indulging with, who they're speaking with. I believe it'll be a stronger prospect of success moving forward, opposed to if they're out and about and their whole crew is doing everything else besides what your initial child was taught in the house, you know, kind of pump the brakes on it. Ultimately, what's going to happen is going to happen because what's written is written. They're all little vessels, little mini yous, little mini me's, but you know, the creator of the heavens and earth has a plan
for
them as well.
We can do a lot. We have a whole lot of, you know, influence on those years. What about family is important to you? How does your family protect you, guide you, stimulate you? What role does it play in your life and your work?
It's my drive. It's you know, to be a change maker and to desire to be a change maker starts in the home. Mm-hmm. And for my children to understand why I am so grateful to have met my wife and why they are here is because I met my wife through prayer, through humble circumstances. It is, it's a definitely task to not abort from. So
One of the things I find for me, family is like, no matter how, you know, we're talking earlier about purpose and, you know, impact and that drives me. But I often find like when I think about my family, like that's what's going to be in some sense with me forever. Like there's jobs and there's projects and there's changes that we got to make in the world and we're motivated to do so. Mm-hmm. But in some sense, all of that work is sort of temporary in some sense. It's like a stepping stone to some other change. But those family relationships, those connections, I feel like that's eternal, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, so I often experience that in my life when anything's challenging me or whatever, it's like, hey, you know, I got my wife, I've got my kids, I've got my family. Mm-hmm. That's, you often hear what people talk about on their deathbed. Like, what do you wish, right? Mm. What do you wish you did different? Or what are you most proud of? Or what are your regrets? And commonly people say, you know, even the most successful, wealthy people, right? They'll say, you know, I wish I spent more time with the people I loved. I wish I spent more time telling the people I loved, I love you, you know, how much it means. And what is all that we're striving for? Even the people on the other side of the equation, they're just trying to fill a hole, whether it's money, fame, success, or, you know.
Right.
It's still trying to fill that same hole. We're like, we're seeking God's love. We're seeking each other's love.
Yes.
And so family is like that first church, first school, first, right? Yeah, it's important. It's important to me too. It sustains me. And okay, here's a final question for you. Mm-hmm. Easy question. Mm-hmm. How do we bring about world peace? No, I'm kidding. How do we, you know, in all of the kind of distractions, the confusions, the divisions, the and perhaps in your life, living in the world we're living in today, describe to me how does Robert be a peacemaker? How do you see God working through you in a way when you're in a situation where there's confusion and distraction, negativity? How does Robert bring peace? How does peace start with you?
Knowing that peace is the ultimate equation. Like, if I'm not at peace with myself, I can't even propagate peace to someone else. And that means that I actually have to overstand all of those characteristics and qualities that you just mentioned that comes with being a father and raising the children, right? Because you love your children, I love my children, but we're all brothers and sisters.
That's right.
All colors, all cultures, all creeds. And we're against a machine. And the machine means that we have to continue to propagate peace. Mm. And peace is love. Peace is understanding. You know, peace is not looking down on someone.
Right.
You know, peace is letting them know, listen, we care, you know, wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
And then you have to have that body of work, those footprints in the sand that someone can look back and reflect on and say, you know what, he's real.
Yeah.
And we need to multiply that and multiply it and multiply it and multiply it. And it's its own algorithm, and you can't take the gas off.
You're writing a book.
You can't take the gas off.
You know, anyway, I just really want to say thank you, Robert. Thank you for sharing your story from birth, you know, losing your twin also. I think I believe there's an association there. There's a relationship there. There's meaning there, and loving your mom, seeing, you know, just as a young boy, growing up in a world that, you know, should be better, and instead of being stampeded by it, you picked yourself up out of it. And not just to make your life comfortable or your mom's life comfortable, but that you're bringing it and you're bringing it back to the community and you're bringing it to the world at large. And so I feel from you a real peacemaker. I feel your characters, we all have completely different, you know, backgrounds, upbringings, and various experiences, but I really feel in you a leader of peace who's coming to the same table that everybody else is seeking. And so I just wanted to thank you, appreciate you.
And I appreciate you, and I thank you for inviting me here to your show.
Yeah.
Because you need to be duplicated quadruple times. You're, you know, no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Appreciate
you know, the module that you're bringing into the media, when I say gas on, gas on, gas can't come off. That's it.
Well, I did learn to drive in Italy, and they like driving fast.
And now you come over here, and it's a different steering wheel on a different side.
It is. It's automatic too.
But you multitask at all times.
Gotcha.
And you're a global, what you a world traveler, mm-hmm. right? And you know, not only propagating peace, you're a father.
Yeah.
You're a friend. You're a brother. And you're definitely appreciated, and I love this platform and what you're going to do and the change that's going to be implemented in the community from it.
Means a lot. Thank you, brother. Thank you. I appreciate you.
Bless.
Peace Starts With Me podcast is produced and directed by A. Curtis Farrow. Assistant producer, Kuichi Nakai. Associate producers, Albin Gaval, Ron Lucas, Terry Gadson, and William Lagrateria. Editor, Albin Gaval. Audio engineer, Oji Behian. Media director, Robert W. Alexander of 360Wise Media. And PR and branding by Irving Street Rep.